Welcome home. We are WNST. Towson, Baltimore. Baltimore positive. We're positively getting into a weekend of baseball. A little cooler this weekend. I mean, I won't have to wear my my camel hat outfit like I'm riding a camel in the Sahara like I was at the Yankees game last week. The Orioles home this weekend. Arizona Diamondbacks. We will be at Fadley's from 2 until 5. I've got an interesting Mother's Day guest headed in this weekend. We got Preakness weekend next week. We will be there with scratch-offs. On behalf of Mother's Day, we don't even have Miss Pac-Man scratch-offs. We only have Pac-Man scratch-offs, but I'm sure Mrs. Pac-Man is just as well. Our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, keeping our water clean. Big thanks to Doug Workman and those folks, and Jiffy Lube MultiCare bringing us on the road. I am putting together dates for Pappas State Fair. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. By the way, I'm wearing my State Fair shirt, and I'm going to do a public service announcement here. I did a National Kidney Foundation, several pieces with Vonita Clark, beautiful lady, during a Cup of Super Bowl. I've also had other guests on. Mama Mish was on. She was making me desserts on Wednesday night. We were at the Museum of Industry, where my wife and I went into the Bethlehem Steel exhibit. Joe Giordano, I mean, unbelievable. I have to get him on the show and talk about the Bethlehem Steel project. But National Kidney Foundation, NKF, their Sante event, State Fair, and Beaumont, and Pappas were all a part of it and serving food. And I had all of them. And no offense to Pappas, no offense to Beaumont. You know I love you, Donnie. State Fair had these little tuna ahi, little jams that were unbelievable. And Luke, what they do is they give you a chip. It's like a casino chip. And the old days, my wife and I were the celebrity, you know, like picking the food winner. Now what they do is they give everybody a chip, and your favorite food you put in the chip. And at the end of the night, whoever has the most chips, they won the best thing. And I picked State Fair. So that, I just want to throw that out. So we're going to do a crab cake there. We're also going to be at Costas. We're going to be at Coco's. I got to get over to Marcella. She had some crazy like Berea French fry thing going on the other night. It looked delicious. Luke Jones has been monitoring all things. Sort of a soft, weird week of baseball. A couple games in Washington. The Wednesday night game completely got away late into the night. They won, and they haven't now been swept in a series again for 120 series. And there's all this weirdness going on with all that. But you know, behind all this first place this, and John Means that, and Kyle Bradish this, and coming home, and you're getting crab cakes and shrimp salad out of this at Fadley's on Friday. The Craig Kimbrell thing just kind of sits in the middle of it, because you would have liked to have thought we were all going to bed at 9:10 on Wednesday night instead of, like, biting nails down till 10:15. And the game lingered, and it went longer, and this guy on second base thing, we're all getting still 2-3 years into this, and how it could benefit you, you know, quite frankly, when you could hit the ball. wow, right? And the Kimbrell thing, this, we've been talking about this from the beginning, and from the minute Batista got hurt last year, it 9 months later, we're still in it, right?
Yeah. And look, I mean, we've said this over and over. I said this the day that the Orioles signed Craig Kimbrell. Craig Kimbrell at his best, any other reliever in baseball at their best, was not going to be what Felix Bautista was to this ball club for the first 5 months of 2023. That's just reality. There is a very short list. Anyone that might approach that wasn't available, right? Is with their team and is viewed in the same light that the Orioles view Felix Bautista. So it was always going to be a challenge to navigate a 6 month regular season, let alone talking about October and what that kind of an arm can mean in those kinds of high leverage, liver die situations in October. But this is a problem. And I mean, we're at a point now where I think we see what happened over the first few weeks, which was Craig Kimbrell pitched really, really well. But there was some question as far as how much Brandon Hyde was using him, how much the Orioles were leaning on someone who's in his mid-30s and certainly, you know, more than on the back nine of his career. He's on the back couple holes of his career. I mean, it's just the reality of someone who's been as good as Craig Kimbrell was for such a long time. So we see the hiccups that start in the Oakland series, and you say, okay, it's probably time to back off this guy a little bit in terms of expecting him to pitch back-to-back nights or pitching three times in four games, whatever it might be. And you say that. So, you know, we've seen You know, he had a little bit of the reset where they didn't use him during the Yankee series. He was dealing with the upper back tightness. I said to you in that Oakland finale, looked like he was uncomfortable, whatever. So unfortunately, we now see a situation where he hadn't pitched since Saturday. So physically speaking, he should have had sufficient rest. He should have been fresh. He should have been sharp. You know, it wasn't so long of a layoff that you'd say, well, okay, he hasn't pitched in a week. He comes in and does not do the job on Wednesday night. And it leads to this 12-inning marathon. That was a very entertaining ball game, and the Orioles won. And they'll gladly accept another off day on the heels of using everyone in your bullpen not named Mike Bauman. But where do you go from here? I mean, Craig Kimbrell, the last five outings, has not finished the ninth inning in four of them. He's blown saves. He, you know, put the club in a position where they have to lean on someone else. And you've got almost 5 months of season left, and you're talking about someone who's being paid $13 million. And you are talking about someone with a track record and someone who pitched really, really well the first 3 weeks of the season, 3.5 weeks of the season. So we've even seen it this year that he can pitch really well, but
But they talked about
it's a
him having a
problem.
problem last weekend, right? Like that there was an arm problem. Now, whether, you know, that's real, imagine, I'll take it at face value. He went away for a day or two. He threw some side. He came back. If there's an arm problem, that's one thing. Finding the strike zone is another thing. And that's been the issue for me the last couple of days. Is he hurt, or just can he not throw strikes, or is he old, or is he overused? Somewhere in there, doesn't really matter. It's not effective right now, and they better find another solution.
Yeah, I mean, and the answer could be yes to all those questions, right? A lot, quite often, it's not just one thing. It can be
Right,
a number
he's
of
hurt
things.
because
He's going
he's
to be 36 years old
overused because
later
right,
this month.
and he can't throw strikes because he's hurt and he's overused, and
Yeah, yeah.
and he's making
Now,
$13 million and he's
just
expected
for
to pitch and he
clarification.
doesn't want to go sit in the tank for 2 days, 2 weeks and not be there for his teammates. He's trying to earn his way. He's a veteran guy. Like I kind of feel for him because he couldn't throw a strike the other night when he needed to.
Well, I mean, I feel for Brandon Hyde and the Orioles and the rest of the bullpen at this point too. But I mean, it's difficult because I mean, you have $13 million invested. I mean, I'm seeing people clamoring for him to be released. They're not releasing him at this point, nor should they at this point. That said, that doesn't mean he should be taking the ball for every save situation either. Let's be very clear. And I saw some people got hung up on Brandon Hyde saying after the game that he's still the closer, yada, yada, yada. I mean, he's been pulled from multiple games now in the ninth inning. We're already seeing Brandon Hyde waver in terms of his confidence. He's not going to throw him under the bus, especially a veteran player. I mean, you're not going to do that to any player of any age or any skill set, as long as it's not an effort thing, as long as it's something where we're saying, hey, we keep telling this guy to do this and he's not doing it. You know, so he's struggling. He's struggling big time. And, you know, just clarification. I mean, a couple weeks ago against Oakland, they said it was upper back tightness. Now, could that be something that pertains to the shoulder? No idea, right? I mean, there are guys who struggle and we find out they're hurt, or guys struggle and they're just old and they're worn down. And this is the reality. And this is why when they signed him, even though I was not against the signing, but I did take some pause because let me just read off some numbers for you. 6.53 ERA in 2019, 5.28 ERA in 2020. In 2021, it was split a really good ERA for the Cubs, but then a 5.09 ERA for the White Sox, a 3.75 ERA with the Dodgers, 3.26 with the Phillies last year. So there's some good in there. I'm not saying all bad, but this is kind of who Craig Kimbrell's been for the better part of 5 or 6 years now. I mean, the guy that he was in Atlanta.
Unreliable, right? 13 million, you want to feel more reliable. That's, I mean,
Yeah,
it's just
well.
you can't count on this. And maybe that was your off-season point, is that the money, the age, everything, it's nice when it's nice. It was nice 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, right?
Yeah.
And when it's not nice, you better have another solution.
Right. And that's why I felt all along, even if Craig Kimbrell was going to pitch well, this wasn't going to be a case of Craig Kimbrell's going to be your closer every
Strike one,
night.
strike two,
Yeah.
strike three, one
I
out,
mean,
two out, three outs. Let's shake hands and go have a beer, right?
I mean, the consistency and the workload, quite frankly. And that's where I will stick up, not stick up for him, but at least look at it through the lens of he probably did pitch a little bit too much over the first 3.5 weeks of the season.
Well, how about this? If you're going to win 101 games, how many save opportunities are you going to have in 101 games?
You're going to have a lot.
You're going to have 75 save opportunities, maybe 80. They played a hell of a lot of close games last year. But whatever it is, whatever that number is, it's more than any one guy is going to have. You're not going to have 72 saves, especially at 35 years of age. That's not going to be where it is. So we're going to have to be other solutions to begin with. And, dude, you are the oldest of old school guy. You've been talking about that almost every day for 5 months.
I mean, you know, it's just a case. You need, as I've said over and over and over, and I don't mean this patting myself on the back thinking Craig Kimbrell was going to have these kind of struggles this soon, this early in the season. If anything, I was envisioning something like this maybe come July and August, right?
Which is even worse, right? In the pen.
Right. And that's where this is concerning. And again, it's not looking at this through a lens of, oh, he's totally done. He might be, but I'm also not going to make that decision the second week of May. You know, I don't think that would be a responsible call either, but yeah, you need to look at this and maybe you do need to expedite what we've been saying for quite some time, which was they were going to need to add at least one very legitimate, high leverage back end of the bullpen, whether he's some team's closer or whether he's their unreal fireman, eighth inning type, what Batista was for the Orioles 2 years ago before they traded Jorge Lopez, you know, someone like that, someone who has that kind of arm. I think, and Wednesday was a great example of this, Nestor. When you have the format that you have in extra innings, and I know that that doesn't carry over to October, and I'm glad for that because I'm not a big fan of the – I know you despise the runner on second in extra innings.
I didn't
however,
I was getting sleepy at 9:45, but
right.
Like
– However
– Yeah.
However, what is so critical, what skill set is so critical to have when the opposition starts with a man on second base before –
strike a guy out.
Yeah, strike people out. And this is a bullpen that doesn't have enough of that. They have some guys who can strike people out, but you look around at the best bullpens in baseball, and yeah, they might have a closer that's a big name guy that people know about, and he's made it to all-star teams and all that. But you have two or three other guys that are averaging well over a strikeout per inning. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, you look strikeout per inning. Yeah, that's kind of
if Josh Hader's
baseline.
Your only guy, you don't have much, right?
Yeah. So, and again, it's not that the Orioles don't have any of that. You go and look; they actually have some relievers that have some decent strikeout numbers. But I mean, I just—it's funny. I've made this comment to you. I have a text thread with some of my buddies from high school who I've talked about the last couple of years that they've gotten back into baseball. Many of them who hadn't watched baseball in years, and I said to them, "I'm like, man, if only this Orioles club had the 2014 Orioles bullpen with Britton and Andrew Miller and Brad Brock and Darren O'Day." And I mean, that was really close to lockdown. It wasn't as locked down as what Kansas City had at that point in time.
But you
Davis.
Also speak of it in a way that it's the best bullpen in the history of the organization. And you might not be wrong about that. If you want to go back to Eddie Watt and wherever, but certainly Sammy Stewart and Tippi Martinez and Don Stanhouse did not hold. No offense to those guys. I watched it all. The group you just mentioned, when I think of all those guys, I think I'll put him in. Get me the O'Day out of the bullpen right now. I'll take my chances with that. He'll get me through. You know what I mean? Like, when you think of them in retrospect, you think good thoughts or not so good thoughts. You know what I mean? Like, so we can go through the names of all of the club, but that group, every name you gave me is we all have good memories of good things happening in the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th inning. Except for Kansas City, but they were not involved in that at that point. The Kansas City guys were better, quite frankly, which is how they lost.
They were.
To your point, and you don't want that to happen again.
And I mean, but it illustrates what I've been saying. You need multiple guys. It's not just Craig Kimbrell. In the same way that it wasn't just Felix Batista. I mean, Nestor, we were talking about it at the trade deadline last year, and I get it. They got Fuji, and, you know, it didn't work out, right? And that happens. I'm not picking on Mike Elias, you know, to a extreme degree there.
He was brought in to strike people out, to your point.
He was, and at times he did, and then other times he couldn't throw any strikes. And again, I mean, some of that, look, you're not going to bat 1,000. We talk about this all the time with the Ravens. As successful as the Ravens have been, not every trade works. Not every draft pick works. Not every free agent signing is going to be a great value signing. So some of that's going to happen, but we talked about it 8 weeks before, 7 weeks before Felix Bautista even got hurt. And what, I guess it was about a month, after the trade deadline when he finally blew out his elbow. But we talked about it at that point in time where it can't just be Batista every single night. It can't just be Cano and Batista every single night. And in fairness, Danny Coulomb has stepped up and Danny Coulomb has pitched well this year for the most part. It's not as though the cupboard is completely bare, but in terms of lockdown, eighth and ninth inning guys, not guys that are seventh inning and occasionally eighth, but guys that you feel on any given night can pitch the eighth or the ninth, because you know that whether it's Craig Kimbrel at 36 years old or whether it's Felix Bautista in his prime, they can't pitch every single night. Bautista came as close as it gets. And again, maybe that contributed to his elbow, maybe not. Guys break, elbows break. I mean, it's just reality in 2024. But you need more. And I think when you're seeing what's happening with Craig Kimbrel here and how the Orioles are going to try to navigate this, I saw more than a few people, you may have even mentioned it, the Ubaldo Jimenez pothole in the parking lot, as far as him mysteriously landing on the DL years ago. I mean, I don't know if it needs to be something like that. I don't know if it needs to be that you back off on him entirely and he takes the Mike Bauman route for lack of a better role for the time being, where it's just you pitch him in as low leverage as it gets. But Wednesday was, I admittedly had been more on the dismissive side of Kimbrel being this big picture problem. I was trying to view it through the lens of, okay, he's a little overworked. Everyone goes through a tough week or two. Even the best closers are going to have, they're going to blow some saves. But for him to come out Wednesday night after getting a few days off and still look like that, where he should have been completely fresh, that's where I looked at that and said, okay, does Mike Elias need, I'm not saying the move needs to happen tomorrow or this weekend. I still think you want to be measured. You don't want to make a panic acquisition where you give up too much for a guy that, frankly, isn't much better than what you have,
But
Jacob
you
Webb,
already
Albert
needed help to
Torres.
begin with. If you
But
consider him to be hurt or injured or back of the bullpen at this
right.
point, you've known all along that, like,
But that's where I'm looking, right. But that's where I'm looking
whatever
at
he's
this.
been measuring, it's been available out there. The talk's probably, you check back in and say, is this guy available with teams that are fading already, right?
Yeah, and but that's the problem, right? And we've talked about this the last couple of years. When you have
As
an
teams
extra
fade.
wild card spot, fewer teams are fading. So I do think this the urgency needs to be heightened a little bit here. I mean, and that's that Captain
Hey, the
Obvious
Marlins
statement.
are giving guys away. Let's call them.
Yeah, we'll see. But I do I had been coming from this, coming at this with the idea that, by the trade deadline, if you can do it a little bit before then, great. Now I'm starting to wonder if you need to have that kind of a piece acquired by, I don't know, early June. They're still winning games, right? I mean, they're in first place. They still have the best record in the AL, although the Yankees keep winning. So certainly
But this
they
is
can't.
preventative medicine.
And that's the thing, right? You don't want this to be, you don't want to be in a position where you're blowing games left and right, and suddenly you have a 3 week period where you go 500 when you could have been. You're 12-12, and it should have been, I don't know, 15-9, right? I mean, you don't want to be in that position because that can matter. I mean, two, three, four games. I mean, that can be everything. That can be the difference between the division and one of the top two seeds and a wild card. I mean, it's not much. So, again, no, you're not releasing him. No, you're not getting rid of him. No, that, I mean, that would be unwise this early, but you certainly are backing off. You're certainly in a position now where I think you have to approach it the way the Orioles did the week of the Yankee series and the way they did last September. I think for right now, it's all hands on deck, and you do this by committee. And yes, Brandon Hyde's got to manage workload. Like, you can't have Cano going out there 4 out of 5 games on the regular or anything like that. But you've got to look at it through the lens of, okay, if you're facing a team that tends to have pockets of left-handers in their lineup, that might be a Danny Coulomb night, or that might be a C.N.L. Perez night, where they might be the ninth inning, or they're going to pitch in the eighth inning. If it's the heart of the lineup and it's more lefties, so you kind of have to. I think you're going to have to approach it that way. And look, some analytics types would tell you that's the way you should be doing it anyway. Unless you have, and they would even say, even if you have a lockdown closer, you shouldn't just relegate that guy to the ninth inning, no questions asked, because sometimes the game might be won in the eighth inning if the heart of the order is coming up in a one-run game. So I think that's just where they are right now. And I'm not saying that's ideal. I'm not saying I'm comfortable with that. But at the same time, you can only make the trades that are presented to you. You can only make the deals that are presented to you. And if we know anything about Mike Elias to this point, he's not going to panic. He's going to be methodical about how he does this, and probably to a fault. Even going back to last year with not doing more to fortify the bullpen even before Batista got hurt. So it's a concern. I'd be disingenuous if I sat here continuing to be dismissive about the Craig Kimbrel struggles, because like I said, this wasn't the back end of a back-to-back, back-to-back nights where he pitched and was good the first night. Like he was in Cincinnati, for example, was good Friday night, no problem, struck out the side even. But then Saturday night came and you saw how it looked. So now this to be 3, 4 nights later and it looked the same way, where he should have been fresh, not overworked, anything like that. That's where I look at this and say, okay, how do you proceed? You're not going to bury him, and you're not going to disrespect a veteran. And look, he was really good the first 3.5 weeks of the season. So he's shown that it's still there to some degree, in some shape or form, unless he is injured. So how do you back off while getting him right? The answer isn't completely just throw him in the back of the bullpen and he never pitches unless it's 9-1. I'm not sure that's going to fix him either, but you've got to find a sweet spot here between trying to get him right, trying to get him straightened out, but also paramount is you've got to win games and you've got to protect leads in the ninth inning. And Craig Kimbrel's just not doing that for the Orioles right now.
Luke Jones can be found at Baltimore Luke anywhere the internet travels, the Instagrams, the LinkedIns, the Twitters, the Facebooks, the X's, the Threads, all those places. We're going to be at Fadley's on Friday. Giving away Pac-Man scratch-offs from the Maryland Lottery. I have them right here. Cherries, $5 winners, $10 winners. I'm waiting for my first 50. I had a 20 a couple weeks ago. So I like when 50s and 100s happen out on the watch. That's when it's good. Or even better yet, CMD Lottery. If that happens, that means you got to go see John Martin and take the big spin. They have the new Cash Pop game this week, too. I had to learn the rules on that one. You can listen to that piece out in our audio vault at Baltimore Positive. Arizona coming in this weekend. Toronto comes in middle of next week. Seattle. I mean, this is a real homestand. Weather's going to change during all of this. And this homestand has something we haven't had. Bradish in the rotation, Means back in rotation. Bradish won a couple the other night, and certainly they should have won the ball game flat out 9 innings before it all kind of fell apart. The sweep thing's interesting. We haven't talked about that at all, so I'll throw that out on your plate as well. More relevant than the John Harbaugh unbeaten streak in the preseason, but still sort of weird. And the Rutschman thing's weird. And the weirder thing is they really have been swept. I saw it with my own eyes in
Yeah.
Arlington. It just, so like I don't know that there really is a streak there. But all that being said, homestand, here we go. It's whack-a-mole. We've just done 20 minutes on the relief pitching, and oh my God, the closer, and they're in first place, not second place. And are we gonna make trades and all that stuff? But the starting pitching, better, better, better. And that makes the bullpen better, better, better to some degree.
It does. I mean, it makes it easier to navigate, right? I mean, and this goes for whether you have a great bullpen or whether you have bullpen questions. I mean, I thought Kyle Bradish, I came away from Wednesday's outing really encouraged. Early on, fastball command was about all he had, right? I mean, the secondary stuff, he couldn't command it. First couple innings, you're starting to wonder, okay, is he even going to get through five, let's say? Is he going to get through four the way it's looking? But he settled in and, I mean, strikes out the side his last inning. Look, that started to command his other stuff. Lots of swing and miss. Velocity held well again. I think he touched 98 at one point. Not that that's the end all be all, but I mean, typically if you're asking if someone's healthy, I mean, the velocity's one of the first things that you're kind of looking at. So far, so good. Again, you knock on wood and you hope that he's feeling good the day after a start, 2 days after a start, all that. But I thought he finished that start in really impressive fashion. So the streak thing is, I'm not the one to talk to about that, because honestly, I kind of loathe that people are continuing to give it as much oxygen as they are because they got swept last October. Look, I don't say this to be Debbie Downer. There is so much about this ball club to love Craig Kimbrel aside right now, but so much to love, to be excited about, to be impressed with, you know, the runs they score, fact that they're the best team in the American League, go down the list. They got swept last October. And I just, to continue to make this, and look, I get it, regular season, to continue to make this a big thing, and I'm not saying you, but the broadcast.
They got swept the only time it mattered.
Right. And I, Nestor, you can go back to my 12 Orioles thoughts following the sweep in Arlington that following morning. I flat out wrote, this was going to happen and it was going to be annoying to me. I mean, it's, I don't want to, you know, I'm not going to let it ruin my morning, but it irritates me because they got swept last October. I get it. It's a regular season streak. Historically speaking,
you're a bad
it still
guy,
counts.
Luke Jones, and you don't deserve a press pass, and I deserve your press pass for saying that. And I'm telling Mr. Rubenstein on you.
But that aside, that old man yells at cloud rant aside, homestand, Arizona coming in. I mean, the Diamondbacks are playing better of late, but overall have not looked like the defending National League champs. And let's face it, they did not have a very good record last year. We talked about the Cinderella nature of their run last October. So am I shocked
so
by how
forgettable? I almost forgot about it, to be honest
right,
with you.
Right.
You don't think of them. You think of the Dodgers, and you look up, and they're sub 500. You're thinking, oh, these guys stink. We should get 2 out of 3 this weekend.
Well, you know, I they're still talented, and to their credit, they had a, I like their off season. You know, they made some moves where you say, hey, they're trying to strike while the iron's hot. Makes sense. But you know, they've won a couple here of late, but you know, under 500. So you mentioned Blue Jays after them, Toronto. I mean,
I forgot everything that happened after we got off the plane from Arlington last October.
Yeah, right. It was either that or people just didn't want to watch because it was too painful at that point. But
I'll try to remember it between now and when we get together at Fadley's on Friday, but I probably won't.
Yeah, but, you know, Toronto to follow. I mean, the Blue Jays. I mean, I think I said this before the season. I mean, I thought the Orioles clearly have the most young talent in the division and deserved the proper due that, you know, frankly, a lot of people weren't giving them with just hyping up the Yankees as much as they could. But you know, Toronto, I, for all the talent, and remember, Toronto was the team that in the division that was perceived to be, you know, they were kind of the Orioles 2 or 3 years ago, right? Where you looked at all their young players on the roster, and it's just, you know, you look at the rotation, you look at the position talent, and you just say, why aren't they better?
Well,
and
the other thing is they're Canada's team, and this is something like, I want to take you up to Canada and get your passport stamped and hang out with Geddy Lee and drink good beer with hosers and do all that stuff. But I like the Blue Jays brand in that, and like they're really the Yankees of Canada in that way for baseball, and they're owned by this giant conglomerate. Yep. That they could spend money and they could have off season splashes, and it's a sexy place to go and sign. I don't know about the money or how it translates to Canadian money, but when I go there, I'm on the cheap in Canada, so it's nice. I'm sure you get taxed the hell out of it, but you have an agent to figure all that out. Yep. I've never heard anybody say they don't want to go play in Toronto. I was in Toronto in December doing the Geddy Lee My Effing Life book thing at Massey Hall. And Massey Hall is like this famous place where Rush did All the World's a Stage, and it's this place I'd always wanted to go. And it's a little theater, beautiful little theater, but it's almost like a New York little Broadway theater with not a lot of space and a balcony that hangs over. And that was the night that the Shohei Ohtani rumors of him coming to join the Blue Jays. So I was in Toronto on a cold, wet Christmas Toronto night amongst all of these people. And, you know, Geddy's a baseball head, right? Mm-hmm. It was brought up during the conversation, like Blue Jay fever, and the place erupted at the thought that Ohtani could, I mean, that's how seriously they're considered to be serious, is that they were in, I mean, God bless Rubenstein. He's going to have his hands full signing our own guys. But if you're talking about signing Ohtani, you're talking about off seasons, you're talking about additions. I thought once they had the Encarnacion era and that era 5, 6 years ago when Donaldson and all, like, I thought they would be a powerhouse. I really did. I thought, and you and I talk about this a lot, I thought they'll be more like the Dodgers. They'll just spend a lot of money because they have the attention of the country all summer long in a way that, if you've ever spent any time in Canada, and it's a hockey country, it really is, but baseball gets real oxygen there for the Blue Jays. I just thought they would be a terror in the division. And if I was meeting with Mr. Angelos or anyone serious, I'd say, Look out for the Blue Jays to be the next Red Sox over the next 15 years. They're going to spend $300 million a year. They're going to be the ones that sign Rutschman. They're going to be the ones that Gunnar Henderson will be a Blue Jay because they have the kind of dough to do that. And I always thought they'd be a problem much more so than Tampa, which is never going to be that, right? The Yankees and the Red Sox. And the Red Sox have fallen, the money, just all of it. When I have Boston people on, they tell me the Red Sox are number four a lot of mornings in Boston behind the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Patriots, right? And Tom Brady's roast will be number one, obviously, especially this week. But no jokes about Mr. Kraft, please. I would just say the Blue Jays are the sleeping giant to me of if I'm giving Mr. Rubenstein advice, I'd say they're the ones that could spend money like drunken sailors and would be in on players. I'm blown away that they're not better than that in that way, you know, that they're not every year a problem for us in the division.
Well, and part of the problem has been their young players that, like Vlad Guerrero Jr., who a few years ago you thought was going to
Hall
be
of
one of the
Fame.
best players in baseball, and he's been kind of, I don't know if middling's the right word, but underwhelming compared to where he was a couple years ago. So,
Well, if any of our guys, if that's what Cowser turns out to be,
yeah.
or what any of these guys, if they all turn out to be Matt Wieters, no offense to Matt Wieters, who was fine, but if they all wind up being Matt Wieters or Nick Markakis, all of our
Yeah.
group,
I mean, Gunnar's already better than those
where is he
guys.
5 years from now?
Sure,
That's
sure.
going to be the question, right? I mean, because that is the promise. We're building all of our hopes and dreams on this in the same way the Mets built it on Isringhaus and Pulsifer. And, you know, I mean, it never happened. Here, division last year, but back to your point, they got swept. And back to my point, the Blue Jays are coming in, and the Orioles are still the better team every
Oh,
night next
by
week.
a lot. By a
Yeah.
lot. I mean, the Blue Jays. You mentioned Ohtani. That was kind of the problem. Their problem was they put all their eggs in the Ohtani basket. They didn't land him, and then you look at the rest of their offseason. It's like, what did you do? What did you do to make your team better? So, and young guys that they've been counting on, guys that they thought were going to be core members of their team, it hasn't worked out. I mean, it's not that there's no redeeming quality about them, but they enter Thursday, three games under 500, a minus 44 run differential. It hasn't been good. Even their pitching, which you kind of thought you looked at their rotation, you say, oh, they should have a good rotation, but it's been lacking. Their pitching in general has been lacking. So,
Did you ever watch Dave Steeb pitch? Did you ever have the honor of
I
watching him
mean,
stuff baseballs and making a move or no?
I'm well aware of him.
He was filthy.
A little before my time in terms of really, really remembering that. I mean, my earliest recollections.
I can't wait to put you in a car in Buffalo and get you some proper hotcakes, take you across the Peace Bridge up to Toronto, and take you out there to Exhibition Stadium, where there's now a soccer stadium, by the way. And breathe in the air of the lake, the
Yeah,
Canadian air.
my earliest record, like my first baseball season that I can genuinely say that I really, really remember. I mean, I have flashbulb memories and little bits and pieces before that, but 91's about, when my age 7 season as a baseball fan is really the first one that I really remember following on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis. I mean, a great year, right?
I'm going to
Orioles
take you to
lost
the
95
Henderson
games.
Brewing Company in the Toronto suburbs and get you a proper Rush Golden Ale in Toronto. But in the meantime, we got a homestand, right? And we have like you and I have been at this 15 years. Like every morning, we have to like get up and talk about the Orioles now, and it's like important. And they play extra inning games, and closers matter, and decisions of the manager matter, and lineups matter, and who's up and down matters. This is fun. It like putting together the 25th anniversary, the documentary, like it wouldn't have been nearly as fun if the Orioles weren't relevant again, because I sort of forgot how much fun this can be. Baseball's good right now. This homestand's going to be good, and we're in the pie. And I would say this, the best news is the starting pitching for me. We focused on the bad news, and the owner's going to squirt people and like all that. And I'm still not going to have a press credential, but I would say this. Starting pitching, like we questioned that for a couple of weeks, and it was rocky. Certainly from the minute Bradish was infirmed. Are we feeling better about that part of it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Grayson Rodriguez threw off a mound on Wednesday and sounds like he threw all of his pitches. Sounds like he's feeling good. So even he could be back in the not too distant future. I mean,
Putting guys at 7 innings of shutout ball in a bullpen.
Yeah. I mean, it so
That you want to improve the bullpen. There you go. I mean, I'll say this, Suarez.
I know it didn't look great for him on Wednesday night. And again, he was thrown into that position because your 35-year-old closer, who is what, fourth or fifth or whatever he is on the all-time saves list at this point, couldn't get the job done. I still have some hope for Suarez. Now, that doesn't mean I'm sitting here saying he's going to be their closer. Let's be very clear about that. But I see an arm that I think can be molded and can grow into a guy that might be able to give you some meaningful innings in the eighth inning. You know, give you
Better than
some.
Bauman innings, to your point. A better role than
Yeah,
that,
I mean,
yes.
you know, we've seen Bauman for a couple years now, and we've talked about him a lot. Look, you talked to me at this time last year. I was really hopeful that Mike Bauman was going to grow into a role of not closer, but
Well, we
eighth
had the
inning guy.
Baker role too. I mean, there have been several
Yeah, I mean,
roles here.
and look, I mean, you're going to have some of that. I mean, look at Jacob Webb. He's on another role. I mean, when they acquired him from the Angels last August, he was really good for his first month or so with the Orioles. I mean, to the
Well, he's
point
been
where,
what Fuji wasn't, right? Like in that way.
yeah. So, but you're going to have that. You have the ebbs and flows of a closer. It's like the stock market. You have a stock that you ride it. It's the hot hand. You make your little bit of money and then you sell, right? I mean, that's, you know, I sound like someone who doesn't know anything about the
You
stock
sound
market
like a general manager in the
saying
NFL
that.
of running backs. Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly. You sound like Chad Wheatley's worst nightmare.
but we talk about this. It's a long season. You've got to get contributions from guys that you're not expecting, guys that might be awesome for a month or two, and then they're not so good. And then they're either gone or they're at Triple A, or they're pitching the eighth inning and suddenly they're pitching the fifth inning when it's 7-1 on occasions where the game gets away from you. So, you know, we'll have to see how this plays out. I mean, the bullpen's a concern. I mean, I don't know how it can't be, but that said, they're a team that continues to play near 667 ball. They've kind of been hovering around. They're winning two-thirds of their games. I mean, that's what they've been doing, you know, for the course of this season. And they were really close to that pace last year too. So, yeah, they've got to figure out the pen. I do think Mike Elias is going to have to make a move sooner than the trade deadline. And when I say a move, I mean a meaningful move, not another team's Jacob Webb, where you hope, oh, well, you know, we'll see. You know, you can do some of that too, let's be clear. But I think with where Kimbrel is right now, I'm not saying that they can't salvage this, that he can't get himself back on track, but it is feeling more and more like you might need to be really taking a long look at making a move sooner than later to really try to fortify the back end of that pen. Because as much as, you know, Cano for the most part, it's been good. Coulomb, Webb, maybe Suarez, C&L Perez has been good since coming back from the IL. You don't want to overwork any of those guys, so you need to bring in another arm that you would say, I feel comfortable throwing that guy out there in a one-run game in the eighth or the ninth inning on a given night. Is that move out there to be made today? Maybe not, but I don't think it can wait to the trade deadline. Let's put it that way.
Help is on the way. We got baseball on the way. They're home next 10 days. We're going to be at Fadley's this Friday, next Friday. Pac-Man scratch-offs to give away, courtesy of our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Big thanks to our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. I got my Cole Roofing mug back out. I didn't even have it during my Cole Roofing segment this week with Bill Cole. So I've had great conversations this week. Wendy Braunfein from Curio Wellness came on. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff. I'm going to see Heart and Cheap Trick next week. So we got rock and roll on the agenda. We have the Preakness post-draw on Monday down. Town. I'll be participating in that and the aforementioned National Kidney Foundation event as well. Fadley's has a grand opening this week. We're going to be there on Friday from 2 until 5 this week and next week. I got some cool guests this weekend for Mother's Day. A fella that owns a restaurant called Medium Rare that I've been wanting to talk about. And he does some great stuff in the community. He has a really interesting DNA Mother's Day story he's going to share with us. And that's going to be at Fadley's on Friday. Big thanks to Liberty Pure Solutions, as well as Jiffy Lube MultiCare for sending us out on the road. We're doing good stuff. If you have not seen the 25th anniversary documentary, No One Listens, Everyone Hears, please go watch. You'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll smile. You'll probably send me an email. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.